friends and colleagues, and welcome to Dermasphere, the podcast by dermatologists, for dermatologists, and for the dermatologically curious. I am one of your hosts. My name is Luke Johnson. I am a pediatric dermatologist and general dermatologist with the University of Utah, and I was recently involved in a course on telemedicine for some of the medical students here at the University of Utah, which leads to this bonus episode. I was asked to provide a lecture as an introduction to teledermatology. This was purely a virtual lecture. There was nobody watching me in person. There was nobody watching me live from their couch. There was just me giving a lecture to my laptop. And one assumes and hopes that somewhere out there, some medical students will watch it at some point and maybe get some value out of it. And I wondered if you, gentle listener, would also get some value out of it. So I thought I'd make it available as a bonus episode. I've also made the video file available on our website, dermaspherepodcast.com. So if you want to follow along with the slides as we go, that is where you can do it. Without further ado, here's the lecture. Hello, virtual audience. I sure hope this is recording. Let me just roll up here and make sure it looks like it's recording. It says it is. Well, hello. Welcome to the intro to teledermatology portion of this telemedicine elective. My name is Luke Johnson. I am an assistant professor of dermatology here at the University of Utah. I am specialty trained in pediatric dermatology, and I also see adults. I see about 70% children and 30% adults, and it's awesome. So if you are thinking about dermatology, great choice. Cool field. But one of the nice things about medicine is that there's cool stuff to do no matter who you are. I'm also a co-host of a podcast about dermatology. It's called Dermasphere. And if that sounds interesting to you, then, well, I'll talk more about it a little bit at the end. This is my first time giving a virtual lecture. I've had lectures before while I've been recorded, but I've always had some audience members there who can laugh at me or laugh with me or appreciate my cool socks, which today have Baby Groot on them. So it's a little bit weird to be doing purely a recorded lecture. Seems somehow appropriate though, since this is about telemedicine. Still, it's strange, so I hope this doesn't come off as too weird. That's all I have to say, I guess, about that. So let's talk about teledermatology. So you might think that teledermatology is especially suited for telemedicine because we're such a visual field. And if you think that, then you would be right. So there's been a lot of interest in teledermatology over the years, and it turns out that there's a lot of different permutations of it that have developed, and particular terminology has been developed to explain what type we're talking about. So in my head, I like to group teledermatology into two big categories. The one is provider-to-provider conversation. So I've listed that here as dermatologist to provider, and that means that if you are a PCP and you would like some information about your patient who you think has a dermatologic condition, you then talk to a dermatologist to get some help, like a consult, if you will. And then there's, of course, the provider to patient, or in my case, dermatologist to patient approach, when a patient is corresponding with you via some kind of telemedicine platform, and you are providing them with your medical knowledge, advice, etc. And in each of those categories, dermatologist to provider and dermatologist to patient, you have two separate subcategories, store and forward and live video. So store and forward just means you take a picture and you send it to somebody. And so if you have family members who know you are already in medicine and have sent you a picture of their funny rash or their skin lesion on your phone, then you have done store and forward, provider to patient, teledermatology. I guess assuming you have responded to them. And then live video, of course, is a video that's live. So you're talking via something akin to FaceTime or some similar platform. We'll talk more about some options in a second. So they each have their pros and cons. One of the benefits of store and forward techniques is that the images are often more high resolution. And one of the major potential advantages is that it's, quote, asynchronous. So somebody can take a picture and send it off to some secure storage base in the cloud, and then
10 hours later, when you wake up, you can open up your storage folder and you can look at all the photographs that were sent to you overnight, and you can fire off your opinions about them. Live video, of course, is live. Now, you would think there could be another option of store and forward video, sort of like what I'm doing right now, recording a video, and then somebody downloads it and looks at it later. And I suppose there might be a place for that in dermatology that you could imagine, but it hasn't really been done. So store and forward is basically just still photographs that you send off to somebody, and then there's live video. In addition, in all of those cases, there's a couple of different factors to keep in mind. So if one is that teledermatology can be used for both inpatients and outpatients. Dermatology is largely an outpatient specialty, but especially here in academia, we have a lot of inpatients who require consultation with a dermatologist. So you can do that both through store and forward and through live video. And most of those would be a dermatologist to the treatment team taking care of them. Probably the patient would not call us from his or her inpatient hospital room and request some teledermatology. And then especially for outpatients, again, which is most of our patients, patients can either be at home doing this on their own, which is the case for the majority of patients in the current coronavirus era, or they can be at an outside clinic that has an assistant. So when I was in residency, we would do teledermatology with the prison system, for example. And the prison had a little clinic room where there was an MA or a nurse who would help the patient by, you know, bringing them in and then have the little camera that they would pan across the patient's surface at our request and show us things. And they could also do other physical exam maneuvers and they could look up medical records easily and so on. So you can obviously imagine the pros and cons of that. The at home is significantly more convenient and might have some other advantages that are related to some telemedicine in general versus going to an outside clinic. But if the patient lives 5 hours away on a Navajo reservation and there's a telemedicine clinic they can go to right there versus driving 5 hours to your clinic, there's obvious trade-offs associated with that. Also, of course, if you're at an outside clinic with an assistant, that assistant has to be trained, has to be paid, and so on. So all of this can fall into all of those categories. And of course, we'll talk more about the pros and cons of teledermatology a little bit later. I guess that's the majority of what this lecture is about. So I did a lot of Google image search for this lecture, which has been helpful, I hope, in driving home the point. Somebody once told me that each of your PowerPoint slides should have words and pictures so that your audience can use both sides of their brain to try to remember things. This one has mostly pictures. Whatever. I'd included some pictures because I thought that would be helpful. So this is an example of what things might look like if you did a live video visit, which is the majority of the teledermatology that we're doing in the coronavirus era. This particular platform that's shown here is through this service called Doxy.me, which I'll admit that I use most frequently, but there's lots of others out there, which I've listed here. Doximity, Zoom, InTouch Health, and Epic has their own live video options. None, and there's others too, none of them have achieved status as the preeminent teledermatology software program. I have been using all five of these during this coronavirus issue. So at one point, there will probably be a smaller number that rise to the surface as the best for one reason or another. But right now, there's quite a selection. So this here is about what I would see. So I would see, this is what they call the virtual waiting room. So you can see patients who have logged in and are waiting for you to see them. There's a little chat functionality here. So I make use of that if I want to type in the name of a medication or the name of a diagnosis or something so that the patient knows how it's spelled, for example. That's nice. And then I see the patient here, though most of my patients do not look like this. And then my little video is shown here so that I can properly be distracted by it and keep looking to see what I look like as opposed to actually paying attention to the patient. And from the patient's standpoint, this is what they see. So it's very similar, but it's reverse. It doesn't have the virtual waiting room, of course. But they see mostly me, which is of questionable value. So this is a live video approach to teledermatology, which again is mostly what we've been doing lately. So here's an example of what a clinic might look like if it were teledermatology performed again via live video, but this time at a special telemedicine clinic where you have an assistant, which is this person here, who is doing stuff that you find helpful for your patient visit, especially physical exam stuff. So you can see that she's got this special camera. This one's got a magnifier in it, which is called the dermatoscope. We'll talk a little bit more about those later. So you can say, oh, that mole on this patient's cheek looks a little bit funny. Can you focus on that? Can you put the dermatoscope on that? Or I can't quite see that spot. Move the camera this way. Can you have them take off their shirt? Can you shine a light on it from the other side? That kind of thing. And then this setup is all connected to various computers and so on. So presumably this here is the dermatologist on the other end. Here is an example of somebody doing store and forward teledermatology. So here is our patient, and here is somebody taking a picture of their skin lesion. So this could be an outside telemedicine clinic, just like in the last one, but in this case, it's store and forward. This could be the patient's PCP here who says, huh, that looks a little bit funny. I'll take a picture of it. I'll send it to one of my dermatology colleagues to get their take on it. In the past, that kind of stuff has been informal curbside sort of approaches, but there's effort toward making it more formalized and making this a true teledermatology consultation service where we can look at these photographs sometime later on and offer our opinions about it. Here is somebody who I believe is supposed to be doing a live video conversation because look, she's got a headset and there's a camera pointed at her and stuff, but then like, what is she looking at? This looks more like a photograph than a video, and what is she going to do with this ruler? This isn't what the size it is in real life, and what is she going to do with these instruments? The patient isn't there. So I thought this picture was a little bit funny that I pulled off of Google again because it illustrates some of the shortcomings of teledermatology that we'll talk about in a second. And then this here illustrates some of the benefits of teledermatology. So when you have a teledermatology visit like this lady presumably does, then you don't have to drive to clinic, so you have more time, so you can spend that time doing your hair, putting on makeup, getting yourself a nice cup of coffee, putting on a nice sweater, cleaning up your kitchen so all the counters are clear except for the tulips that you picked this morning, and then finally you get your sweet cute little baby up and you don't have to worry about dragging the baby to the doctors as well. And maybe you have more children, so you don't have to worry about finding somebody to take care of them, and you don't have to worry about taking them to clinic and watching them run all around and spread coronavirus all over the place. So even though there's something amusing about this marketing photograph, if you look closely, I think if you think about it, it can illustrate some of the benefits. So we'll talk a little bit more about those. So teledermatology in general. So some of the benefits or pros versus cons, or I've listed here as benefits versus challenges. So triage, teletriage, as they say, is kind of a nice role for teledermatology. So for example, on that slide earlier where somebody was taking a picture of that mole on the patient's arm, if they send it to me, I can say, that looks totally fine. I have no problems with it. Just watch it, and that's a benefit. Or I could say, I don't like that, they should come in for a biopsy. Either way, that seems to be a particular benefit of teledermatology. There's been a number of studies on teledermatology, and they do show that a provider-to-provider conversation like that does change management. So if you're a PCP, and you send a picture of the patient's mole to a dermatologist, and the dermatologist recommends something, the PCP is more likely to do something different than they would have done had they not sent that information to a dermatologist. Access is probably going to be a common theme you hear across the lectures about telemedicine, and I think with good reason. So access is a major benefit that teledermatology and probably most of telehealth can offer to patients, both because you reach more patients because of where they live. So if they live far away from a medical center for one reason or another, you can still get them care. Also, there's access in terms of just having transportation to get there. There's access in terms of the financial considerations that people might have to pay to get to your clinic and go in there rather than just staying in wherever they are. So access is a major issue and a major benefit that all of telemedicine can provide. In a lot of cases, it's more convenient for patients to do teledermatology rather than to come into your clinic. So I had a telemedicine visit just yesterday with my PCP, and I didn't know it was going to be a telemedicine visit until they called me that morning. So the day before, I thought to myself, okay, my appointment's at 2:40, so I want to leave at around 2 o'clock maybe so I can get there on time. I better let my wife know so that she knows I won't be around to help take care of the kids for that hour to hour and a half that it's going to take. And then they called me that morning and they said, would it be okay to do telemedicine? And I was like, that would be fine, because now instead of an hour to an hour and a half, it's 15 minutes out of my day. And also they don't have the opportunity to take my blood pressure to tell me it's too high. So definitely more convenient for patients in a lot of cases, not all of them. And then is it more convenient for dermatologists? I think a lot of us would have said, yeah, probably before this coronavirus pandemic. But now that we've done so much of it over the past couple months, a lot of us are saying, you know what, this is not more convenient. So the problems, again, which we'll get to, can sometimes really diminish the convenience. However, you can envision a world in which it is more convenient, where you can be hanging out at home at 9 a.m. with a cup of coffee, wearing your robe, scrolling through pictures and quickly dashing off emails about what you think things are. You can envision a world in which you're on televideo dermatology call, but you're on a hike or you're skiing, and then you get a ping saying that this patient needs to see you, so you stop and you pull out your iPad and you have a nice video conversation with this patient, and then you go back to your hiking or whatever. So that kind of thing hypothetically exists. Hopefully it will exist in the real world as well at some point. And then this image here is from a health insurance company that is trying to convince companies who might want to use their health insurance that telemedicine is a good idea. And they make some of the same claims as well as this millennial demand thing, which is interesting. I don't think it's just millennials, but I think that the more familiar you are with technology, then the more comfortable you are with it, and the more you start wondering why this just doesn't exist. Some more benefits. So as mentioned here, reduced absenteeism down here in this graphic. So if I don't have to take time off of work or time off of school, or at least as much time off of work or time off of school to go to my dermatology appointment, then that's a benefit for me. I don't have to take a sick day or a sick half day or something like that. For my pediatric patients, you know, they don't have to miss a couple of their high school classes or whatever in order to come in. They can just do the teledermatology at some time that's convenient for them. Saves travel time, kind of as I mentioned about my own personal visit to my PCP the other day. And the travel time is more or less significant depending on where you are. So there's people who drive for 5 hours from Elko, Nevada to come see me. And if they saved 10 hours, even if they thought that somehow something else about the visit wasn't great, that 10 hours of time savings is pretty significant. And for similar reasons, you can argue that there's a cost savings to society overall. So if you have fewer people taking time off of work, fewer people taking time off of school, including the time that it would take to travel, then you have more people being more productive, which is less of a cost to society. And not just the people who actually come into their visit, but a lot of people bring other people with them to their appointment. So their spouse, or they have to bring their kids or something like that. And then you're also saving those people a commensurate amount of time in travel. And then one article mentioned an educational benefit to referring clinicians, which I think is kind of nice to point out. So if you are a PCP and you send a picture of a mole to me, or you get me on video and say, hey, here's my patient, here's their funny looking mole, what do you think? There's a lot more opportunity for me to say, well, I think that mole looks okay because the pigment irregularity that you see looks like it's because it's around a hair follicle, and pigment dropout around hair follicles are pretty common and benign finding, which I'm less likely to say if you send the patient to me in person and I look at it and I just say it looks fine. So there's an opportunity there for the referring clinicians to learn more than they would otherwise. This image here is again from another random health insurance company that I found on Google, and they point out how much less expensive it is to have a telemedicine visit, I guess they're called RelyMD, versus a visit to the PCP and then urgent care and then the emergency room. So keeping people out of the emergency room is a major cost savings, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec. So as I said, there's been a number of studies about teledermatology, and I just want to hit on a couple of them that have come out real recently that I thought just especially interesting. So this one, just from real recently, involved 41 dermatology inpatient consults. And they had some dermatologists come and see those people in person, and then they had other dermatologists who did a store and forward teledermatology consult. So remember, store and forward is the primary team, took some photographs, and then sent them to the dermatology consultant. And of course, the dermatology consultant also had access to the person's medical records and stuff from the hospital, say, so they were able to access laboratory data and history and whatever else they needed. And what they basically found was there was a lot of agreement between the in-person consultants and the teledermatology consultants. So they refer to concordance, which is basically how often the two different sorts of consultants came to the same conclusion. And then they use this statistic called the Kappa statistic, which measures the degree of concordance, with 1.0 meaning the two people agreed sort of 100% one way or another. And so 0.6 and above is pretty decent in general. So people often agreed about the differential diagnosis. They agreed most of the time about laboratory workup. They agreed basically all the time about imaging decisions. You might not think that dermatology requires a lot of imaging, and you would be right, but it does sometimes. Biopsy decisions, they didn't agree as often as I would have expected, 0.43, but they still agreed fairly often. Treatment, so this is a real nice one. So there was about complete agreement in terms of what to do in terms of treatment. But there was zero agreement in terms of follow-up planning, which seems a little bit odd. I will admit that dermatologists are not used to think about follow-up planning aside from, I guess come see me in 3 months. So I'm not quite sure if follow-up in 2 months versus follow-up in 3 months counted as non-agreement or not, but a little bit of an oddity there. What I find especially interesting about this paper is that even though most people agreed on the differential diagnosis, there was a lot less agreement on whether or not you should biopsy because of that differential diagnosis. So you start wondering if that represents just provider to provider difference rather than a difference created because of the teledermatology, especially since treatment tends to be the same. So this other article that I want to discuss is kind of a review about teledermatology just from last month, where they talked about clinical effectiveness and cost effectiveness. I want to focus here on the cost effectiveness. The clinical effectiveness has been sort of like this study says, this is fairly representative of how the effectiveness tends to be represented in the literature in inpatients, outpatients, store and forward, video, and so on. It tends to seem to be a pretty clinically effective tool, at least according to the studies that have looked into it. According to this study here, again, which is a review, so teletriage, which we mentioned before, so there's a nice potential cost savings here. So if you are a PCP, for example, and you send me that picture of a mole, that might cost $10 to $80. This is supposed to say $10 to $80 less than an in-person visit versus, you know, sending them to me for me to formally evaluate them in my clinic. So in this 2018 study, store and forward teletriage saved about 4,500 visits, which ended up saving about $12,400 per year. That was in Spain, so you can certainly argue that it's not generalizable to other countries. So teledermatology offers potentially more timely care, so people able to get in and see it, get in. People able to get dermatologic care earlier than they would without teledermatology being available. So there was this study from a couple of years ago about, again, store and forward, so taking pictures and sending them off, for about an underserved population in Philadelphia. So this was an urban population that reduced in-person dermatology visits by 27% and emergency room visits by 3.3%, which is a small percent. But remember how wide the gap is between an in-person visit and an emergency room visit. An emergency room visit can cost thousands of dollars. So because of reduced visits, there was an overall savings of $10 to $50 per consult. And then in terms of societal costs, like we discussed before with the travel time, the absenteeism and so on, there have been some studies looking at that that have shown favorable results in Spain, New Zealand, and in our VA system in this country. However, there have also been some studies that haven't been quite as favorable. So there are some studies that say it's more expensive per consult, for example, in the Netherlands, especially for patients who live nearby the clinic where they would otherwise receive care. However, in that study, they showed that people who lived a long ways away, you swung the needle in the other direction. So basically, depending on how far away you lived, you were more or less likely to cost the system more money. So if you were far away, it cost the system less money to have you do a teledermatology visit. And then skin cancer screenings in Australia and the USA are also more expensive. And the idea behind that is people are more likely to need some kind of bedside test or something like that that we can't provide via teledermatology. So their thrilling conclusion is that teledermatology may be cost-effective, especially when applied to certain populations, such as those with poor access to dermatologic care. A rather anticlimactic statement to say that it may be cost-effective, but I think there's a lot of studies suggesting that it is. Okay, so we talked about the benefits. Let's talk about the challenges or the cons. So there are a lot of them. And as we've done more teledermatology over the past couple months due to the coronavirus, we've all become a lot more familiar with them. So you might think that a photograph would be just as good as looking at somebody in person or at least close to it. But in a lot of cases, it's not. So in dermatology, we certainly look at the skin, but we do more than just look at it once. We look at it in a lot of different angles. We look at it in a lot of different lights. We like to touch it. I was about to say we like to smell it, but we don't like to smell it, though sometimes we do by accident. So you can't touch the skin or palpate it to see if a lesion is raised or not, you know, if it's a subtle thing. I like to shine lights on things from the side, again, to just get a better feel of the texture and the contour and the color. We can't do that via telemedicine. So dermoscopy is a technique in which we use a tool called a dermatoscope, which is kind of like a fancy magnifying glass, a fancy, expensive magnifying glass. We'll talk a little bit more about them later, where you hold it up to the patient's skin and you press the button and the light turns on, and then you can see a magnified version of what you're looking at. You can't use that via teledermatology because the dermatoscope's in my pocket and the patient is on the other side of the city. There's a lot of technical difficulties that have become apparent, and it's almost embarrassing to be living in the year 2020 and having these technical difficulties. So patients might just have poor internet connection where they are. They might have a crummy camera. They might have an old phone. I was doing teledermatology with a patient who lives in southern Utah on a Native American reservation a few weeks ago, and they don't even have internet there. I was lucky to get her on the phone. The resolution is often not great, especially in video. So this was an ad for Adobe Photoshop showing how you can use their technology to turn something from low to high resolution. But a surprising number of my patients look like this when I talk to them via teledermatology. Again, this is the year 2020. What the heck? But they look pixelated. It's very hard to figure out what's going on. And look, you can see here, and you can't even tell she has a nose ring here. Like, imagine if that was a scary looking mole or something like that. And there's been a lot of discussion about why the video resolution is so poor. Is it poor because of the patient's internet connection? Is it poor because of their camera? Is it poor because of some other reason? Don't really know. In any case, photographs that people send us tend to be a much higher resolution. And then the technological literacy of the patients is sometimes not great. the majority of my patients, again, are children, and that means their parents are rather young adults, and so they tend to be fairly technologically savvy. But the majority of dermatology patients in general are older adults, because those are the people who get skin cancers. And no offense to older adults, but a larger percentage of them just have less technological literacy. So if you're trying to talk somebody through how to open up their internet browser and go to this website, or we'll send you a link to it, like, it just, something seems to get lost, and it's difficult for them to do. One of my colleagues the other day, about the video resolution, was like, this video resolution is so bad, it makes me feel like I'm playing Excitebike on my old Nintendo. And of course, those of us who were born in the 80s said, you say that like it's a bad thing. Some other problems with teledermatology. So we mentioned skin cancer screening is more expensive before. One of the reasons is because it's really impractical and probably for our practical purposes impossible to perform a good total body skin exam. So in dermatology, we call it a TBSE. So people who are at risk of skin cancer for one reason or another, we like them to come in so we can look their skin all over to see if there's something scary. So this person, for example, has a bunch of moles. If this was teledermatology, this would be really challenging, and you'd probably just have to say, I got to bring you in person so I can look closely at them, so I can use my dermatoscope, try to see which one the problem is, and then maybe biopsy one or two just to make sure those aren't problems as well. So anybody who needs a TBSE probably should not be scheduled for a teledermatology visit. One of the nice things about dermatology is that we get to perform some cool bedside tests. So if we think somebody has a fungal infection on their skin, Tinea corporis or something, we can scrape some of the scale off onto a little slide, and then we can put a little potassium hydroxide on it, and we can go into the other room and we can look at it under the microscope to see if we see any fungal hyphae. You can't do that if the patient's on the other side of the city. We can't perform a culture swab for similar reasons. So we do a fair amount of culturing in dermatology where we see pustules, or we see infected eczema, or again, we see things that we think are fungal infections, and then we do a culture to see what kind of organism it might be and potentially its susceptibilities as well. A Wood's lamp is basically a black light, and different things on the skin potentially can show up differently. So vitiligo, for example, tends to be more obvious when you shine the Wood's lamp on it. There are some types of bacterial or fungal infections. There's one called erythrasma, for example, which can affect the skin folds, and it's supposed to fluoresce a coral pink color when you shine a Wood's lamp on it. Anyway, you can't do that. And we can't do procedures, most importantly, biopsies and cryotherapy. So if you've ever had a wart, you may have had it frozen. Can't do that via teledermatology. And we, of course, can't do biopsies, excisions, removals on people's skin through teledermatology. So those are some significant limitations. Another limitation that's not unique to dermatology is liability. So people wonder, you know, if the something about the visit isn't good enough, will you be held liable in case that ends up coming to bite you? Especially if whatever it is recorded for all time. So for example, let's take this patient in this photograph here. Let's say one of these moles ended up being a melanoma, but you evaluated them and you didn't have any concerns. And then 3 years later, their lawyer calls you and says, well, look at this photograph that's still in the medical system. It's this mole right here. You saw it and you told them it was fine. What's the liability there? It's a question. Potentially an issue is patient modesty or concern. So we've had some discussion in our department that people that we see over teledermatology might not want to take off as much clothing as they would if they were in your clinic for one reason or another. Maybe they have other family members who are hanging around. Maybe they don't have a private place at home. Maybe they just feel more modest. Maybe they're worried that whatever it is being recorded. It's potentially a problem. So a lack of incidental findings is another one. So this might not sound too bad, but if it's an incidental finding, maybe it's not a big deal. But every dermatologist has these stories about, you know, patient came in for something else, and then I saw this weird-looking mole, and I was like, whoa, we better biopsy, and it turned out to be a melanoma. So if a patient is seeing you for acne via teledermatology, and you're just seeing their face and maybe their chest and back, there's no way for you to see the funny mole on their calf, especially if they don't bring it up. And then we've had some questions, again, not unique to dermatology, about whether or not this whole telemedicine issue diminishes the human side of medicine. So in the telemedicine appointment I had with my PCP yesterday, and I will say in the telemedicine appointments I've had with my patients, there's something that feels more business-like about it. More like, all right, we're here, we're going to take care of a problem, we're going to say goodbye, rather than the more touchy-feely, here we are, we're true humans, we're working together on a shared problem. There might be something there. So we talked a little bit about dermatoscopes. Here are some photographs. So this is what my dermatoscope looks like. It's kind of a cheapo model, but it works just fine. You can get fancier ones, you can get bigger ones, and then you put them against people's skin, and then what looked like this suddenly looks like this, and what looks like this suddenly looks like this. You don't really need the dermatoscope to see that this is the bad one, but still, you can see that there's very distinct differences between these two. And dermatoscopy is a big deal in modern dermatology, and there's lots of papers published about it. So this one, for example, different clues to help you differentiate different types of skin lesions from each other on dermatoscopy. So not being able to use the dermatoscope in teledermatology is kind of a major hit. I use my dermatoscope in most patient visits. But perhaps that will be solved by teledermoscopy. So there's lots of different potential approaches for this. So you can get specific teledermatology instruments. So a little bit like the photograph from earlier in the lecture, if a patient goes to a particular telemedicine clinic, they might have one of these, and then you can see a super close-up of their mole on your end where you are. There are dermatoscope attachments that you can get for your smartphone. So, I mean, hypothetically, a patient could get this and could, you know, put it on their phone during your telemedicine visit and then show you their moles. I wouldn't expect that to happen, though there are probably a few particularly dedicated patients who would do that. But you can imagine, like, if you're a PCP, you're getting something like that. And since it's just hooked right up to your phone instead of, you know, one of these things, then it's a lot easier for you to take a photograph through your phone or do it via live video if you've got a dermatologist that you're consulting with. And then they also make the same kind of thing just as an attachment for a big old camera. This is the kind of thing that's used by people who are in the research world and want to take pictures and publish studies like this one. But still, you could use it for store and forward teledermatology as well with a dermatoscope image. So the elephant in the room, as probably has been discussed in other lectures in this class, is reimbursement. So in the coronavirus era, it seems like there's a real push toward covering teledermatology. And by covering it, I mean insurers will pay you to do it. But before the coronavirus, it was pretty patchy. And then after the coronavirus, assuming there is after the coronavirus, it's likely to be patchy and unreliable again. So there's a number of issues regarding reimbursement. So you guys probably have heard the term reimbursement before, but the further you go in medicine, the more often it comes up. And it basically says, we're not here to do volunteer work. Yes, we're dedicating our lives to making our patients better. That's why we became physicians. But we should be paid for it. And of course, just from a human nature standpoint, if something isn't incentivized, then it's just not going to happen. So if teledermatology was purely a volunteer approach, there wouldn't be a lot of people doing it. So we feel that we should get paid for it. And I think that feeling is justified. And there's a lot of issues surrounding it. So one of the issues that's maybe particular to teledermatology is that some insurers will cover will cover live video visits, but not store and forward visits, while some of them cover store and forward visits. Some of them don't cover telemedicine at all. And then there's this business of payment parity, which means, does your teledermatology visit reimburse you as much as seeing the patient in clinic would? And the argument from the physician standpoint is, look at Dr. Johnson's lecture that he just gave to the medical students. Look at all those benefits of teledermatology. Of course it should reimburse at least as much as seeing the patient in person in your clinic. And the argument from the insurer's end is, well, if Dr. Johnson is hanging out at home and seeing his patients through telemedicine, then you guys aren't paying the overhead of having an MA, of having to pay office space rent, of needing all the equipment. So why should we reimburse you the same amount? it can kind of see both sides. But that issue of whether or not a telemedicine visit pays you the same amount as seeing the patient in person is known as payment parity. And again, this is something that varies by insurer and could potentially vary within the same insurer in different plans. It could potentially vary among the same plan as time goes by. So it's a huge mess, and I'm glad I don't have to think too much about it. Sometimes the reimbursement also depends on the patient location. Is the patient at a special teledermatology clinic, or are they at home? So in a number of insurers, again, before the coronavirus age, they wouldn't reimburse you if the patient was at home. They had to go to a clinic to do it, either their PCP or a special telemedicine clinic or whatever. Though these days, again, because of the coronavirus, a lot of them are allowing people to do it from home. What if the patient's in a different state? Do you need to be licensed in their state? In some states, yes. In some states, no. In some cases, it depends on the insurance. In some cases, it depends on where the patient is physically located right now. So they could potentially drive across the border to Utah and then call you on their phone rather than just staying at home in Evanston. And then a different country? That's just a big question mark. I mean, if I can see people from Wyoming, why can't I see people from Denmark or Australia or something? But currently the payment system is not set up to cover anything like that. But you can kind of see the advantage, especially for things like store and forward and potentially things that are urgencies but not emergencies. So for example, in radiology, they have this Nighthawk service where there's people in Australia who read radiographs when it's daytime there but nighttime here so that our radiologists can sleep and their radiologists are up and at them anyway, and then vice versa. And you can see the benefits of that, sort of this global collaboration that could be going on. Okay, we're coming to the end here. So these are my opinions, and let me scroll this out of the way. So there I am, picture me, so you can recall that these are my opinions. So my opinion is that the main benefit of teledermatology to medicine and to society is one of access. I feel like I emphasized that properly before. And then telemedicine is something patients want, and that includes, I think, almost all types of telemedicine, including teledermatology. And this gets back a little bit to the demand, the millennial demand that was mentioned in the one graphic. People want this to happen. And because people want it to happen, there will be competitive pressure for insurers to reimburse for it. And my hope is that the coronavirus somehow gives this a shot in the arm. So more patients over the past 2 months have experienced telemedicine than anywhere before in our history. My presumption is that a number of them will say, hey, that was kind of nice that I didn't have to leave work, et cetera, et cetera. And there will be pressure, further pressure on insurers to cover it. This reimbursement business is going to be a constantly shifting issue. And I encourage you to work for an academic center or a large practice where there are other people who have to think about this so that you don't have to. We talked about how teledermatology is better for some things than others, but it can basically always offer something of value. It's better than nothing, which is a low bar, I know, but still, we can always offer something. So if the patient just can't come in, they're not gonna see you in person, it's better to see them by video than just have them not get dermatologic care. So even if somebody has a wart on their foot, and normally we would freeze it with our cryotherapy, if they can't come in, we can at least recommend some creams and stuff that they can use. And we can talk to them about warts and how they can spread them around and so on and so forth. So I feel like we still have something to offer regardless. As things go forward, we need to watch out for some sketchy online companies that might be trying to take advantage of patients. There are already some teledermatology apps and stuff that people can get. Some of them are pretty good because they connect people with actual dermatologists. Some of them are not so great for various reasons. So it's important to keep an eye out for those and make sure that our patients don't get confused about what's reliable and what's not. The potential reach of teledermatology is enormous, as we discussed, potential global community of teledermatologists serving people anywhere in the world. So the upshot. So teledermatology is a nice option to have, and it's available. It's a nice option to have available, and it works best for established patients with a known diagnosis. It works best for patients for whom coming into clinic is problematic. So here is Salt Lake City, and our catchment area is roughly this part. So I see people who live 5 hours away in Elko who drive up from St. George to see us. I have a patient in somewhere in Montana who drives to Billings and then takes a plane to see me. Teledermatology would potentially be nice for those people. This is a good option for people who need frequent follow-up. So we have this medicine called isotretinoin or Accutane, and the government mandates that people have to see us every month while they're on it, basically, so we can tell them not to get pregnant. And it hurts my heart to make people drive 4 hours from somewhere in Wyoming to come see me for a 5-minute visit just for me to say, all right, sounds like things are still going well. Remember not to get pregnant, and then send them home again. Teledermatology has been great for that patient population. If you have patients for whom the physical exam is less important, then teledermatology would be nice because we talked about some of the technological limitations of the cameras and so on. Dermatologists place a lot of emphasis on the physical exam, so the physical exam tends to be an important part of most dermatology visits, but this goes back a little bit to the established patient issue. So if you have a patient and you know they have eczema or you know they have psoriasis or you know they have acne and the camera's, you know, good enough for you to kind of see the extent of it, then the physical exam is less important and they're probably a decent option for teledermatology. We talked about teletriage, and then again, patients who would otherwise just not receive care, teledermatology would be nice to have available. It's not a good option for new patients. So if there's a new patient on my schedule and it says teledermatology, I'm like, well, I hope it's something like acne where it's pretty easy to figure out. If somebody's gonna need a bedside procedure, as we talked about, if they want cryotherapy, or if you think you're going to have to do a biopsy, you can't do that via teledermatology. If they have particular technological challenges, again, the patient who lives in rural Utah and doesn't have internet access, teledermatology is not great. If the physical exam is very important, teledermatology is not great. And then we talked about skin cancer screenings. So these pictures are just pictures of things that I don't want to do or can't do via teledermatology. So this is a punch biopsy, one of our pretty standard biopsy techniques, which I can't do via teledermatology. I cannot stand inappropriately far away from somebody and use my dermatoscope. Look, it's not even on his eye. but I can't do actual dermoscopy either. And then I can't properly evaluate wacky rashes. Like, what's this rash? I don't know what this rash is. I don't want to have to try to figure this out through teledermatology. I want them to be able to come in person. The future, potentially. So this again is my opinion, so there's a picture of me. So apps, I think, are going to be a bigger deal in the future. People downloading apps that either connect them directly to a dermatologist or that send photographs to a dermatologist, especially for common things like acne, which is particularly lends itself to teledermatology, I feel, and is more of an issue for young people who want apps to solve their problems anyway. Digital dermoscopy, like we mentioned, I can't use my dermatoscope now, but if there are more people out there with dermatoscopes in their pockets that can connect to the internet, then that's going to be part of the future. I imagine that the video resolution issues will get better, and the store and forward photographs will also have higher resolution. The integration of AI, I expect, is coming and is very interesting. So a few years ago, there was this paper in Nature where basically a computer algorithm did at least as good a job at dermatologists as at identifying skin cancer. That's kind of the one-liner, but there's a lot more to it than that. Basically, there are artificial intelligence protocols these days called deep learning, where the computers basically learn like people do, if you will. So they show them 10,000 images and tell them which each image is, and then the computer extrapolates rules that nobody knows what they are, because just like nobody knows what's going on in our brains exactly, extrapolates rules, and then you show them a new image and it can tell you whether or not it thinks it's a skin cancer. So it's interesting stuff, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it gets incorporated into dermatology in general and into teledermatology specifically. That's the whole lecture. So if you are particularly interested in dermatology and you listen to podcasts, allow me to recommend Dermasphere, the dermatology podcast. I am one of the co-hosts. We review some of the latest dermatologic literature. You can find us wherever podcasts are found, and you can find us online at dermaspherepodcast.com. If this was an in-person lecture, this is where I would stop and take questions from you guys, and you would have some very intelligent questions that were very illuminating for everybody. But since this is a virtual pre-recorded lecture, I can just ask you to please send your questions to me at luke.johnson@hsc.utah.edu. Thanks for listening.
Ta-da! That was the lecture. Thanks for listening to it, guys. If you would like to learn more about Dermosphere, just take a look at our website, dermospherepodcast.com. It has our entire archive on it. It also allows you to communicate with us. And of course, if you would like, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get them. We'll see you next time.